Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'll be continuing to talk about your unconscious and explain what it means to be in civil war with yourself. And I'll play the second half of a really interesting and amusing interview that I did with artist Judy Lyons Schneider. Stay tuned. Here comes the show. Welcome to The Lynn Show. If you were listening at the very top of the show, you heard me say that I was going to talk about civil war today. And I'm going to try. But I realize that there's not that much available time in this show. Because the interview with Judy Lyons Schneider is here and it's not short. And I'm going to play the last two songs from my CD, so that you get a chance to hear every song, so that you can vote. If this is the first time you're tuning in, then you don't know that I'm holding an opinion poll about what songs I should use to open and close the show. I've been using You Really Can, which just played to open the show, and I Won't Go With a Whimper, which is the title tune of my CD, to close the show. And it was suggested to me that I reverse them. So I'm giving my listeners an opportunity to vote on that. And then it was suggested to me that there might be other songs from the CD people might think would be better to start or end the show. So I've been playing two songs a week. And this is the last week. Then it's the last two songs. So with the songs and the interview, there's just not a lot of time for the Civil War. So what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to play the first song. We'll get that out of the way immediately. Or maybe I should say, well, I'm not going to say anything more about the show at the moment. Oh, if you're going to vote, you have to go up on my website. That's how you do it. TheLynnShow.com. TheLynnShow.com. Click on Contact Me and tell me what you think about the songs I should use, or tell me whatever you think that you'd like to tell me. So I'm going to play a song called Hollywood Has Got Her. I wrote this about all the women who are struggling to make it in Hollywood when I was there.
She was Papa's little angel, Mama's pride and joy. She was everything you dreamed she'd be and more. When she danced on the kitchen table and sang her special song, how she made you laugh, she made you all applaud. Now Hollywood has got her, it's tearing her apart. And every time she takes a blow, you feel it in your heart. And you wanna say, hey, give it up and come on home to me. But she says she's doing what she must, being who she's gotta be. Working as a waitress, she's thinner than a ram, and the word she's most familiar with is no. And although she lives in Sunshine Land, somehow she's always pale. Oh, she's working hard, she's got nothing to show.
Few weeks, I've been talking about your unconscious mind and how your conscious mind is the mind that you're familiar with, the one that thinks and the one that we mostly think of as me. And our unconscious mind is the keeper of information which, if our conscious mind had it, might be disturbing or uncomfortable or embarrassing or threaten to get us into trouble. So our unconscious mind keeps secrets from our conscious mind and therefore seemingly from ourselves. So when you want to make a change but you can't, and you don't realize that there's a really good reason for that, you almost certainly feel frustrated and want to blame someone. If you don't realize that your unconscious, by stopping you, is acting as an ally, you may blame your unconscious for the trouble that you're having. After all, you know your conscious mind isn't stopping you. Your conscious mind can only see the advantages of the change and clearly wants you to make it. So then, the culprit must be that sneaky, out-of-sight part of yourself, your dreaded unconscious. Shifting the blame off your conscious shoulders can make you feel better. After all, you know you want to do this thing. It's not your fault you're stuck, at least not the you know. But as long as you think of a part of yourself as the enemy, you're fighting a civil war. You're at war with yourself. So if you're being attacked, it looks like you're being attacked, you're being stopped from doing what you want to do, then you must counterattack. But who do you counterattack? Well, the enemy, of course, the one who's stopping you. But the one who's stopping you is you. That doesn't stop us from attacking ourselves. And these attacks often take the form of brutal self-criticism. Shape up, you demand of yourself. Stop being so stupid, lazy, silly, self-destructive, or whatever it is that you call yourself. Unfortunately, criticism rarely has the desired effect. These attacks, which are intended to motivate you, just leave you feeling beaten up. They waste your time, they lower your self-esteem, and then, seeing that you've once again failed to do what you want to do, and feeling that you let yourself down, you may again accuse yourself of being the enemy and launch a fresh attack. Anything can become the basis for a civil war. Aspects of life that many would view as insignificant can be viewed by others as critical. So, does this sound familiar? Are you aware of participating in an internal civil war? Do you have the experience of not being able to do something that you want to do or think you ought to do or think you have to do, or something that you want to stop or think that if you don't stop, something bad will happen, but you can't do it, and so you then ream yourself, yell at yourself, abuse yourself, punish yourself, are in a constant state of pushing yourself and feeling dreadful because all this pushing isn't actually accomplishing the thing you want to do? Civil wars are useless. In a later program, I will talk about the kinds of things we do to ourselves in an attempt to motivate ourselves, to try and get us to do what we think we should be doing, or as I say, stop doing what we think we shouldn't be doing. In my experience, those things almost never work. What they do is they lower self-esteem and they heighten anxiety. And when your esteem is low and your anxiety is high, it's even more difficult to do the kinds of things that you want to do that are difficult. So, I just want to alert you to the fact that this experience of yelling at yourself, beating yourself up, punishing yourself, abusing yourself because you can't do something that you think you should do, that's a civil war. And civil wars are the most disastrous and the least effective. So, now I'm going to stop talking about this because I'm running out of time for it. And I'm going to play this delightful, interesting, charming, funny, interesting, and educational interview that I did with Judy Lyons Schneider. If you were listening last week, you know that we stopped because her gardener decided to come on a day that he isn't usually there. I was interviewing Judy in her living room, and we had this rrrr, and so we stopped to give the gardener a chance to finish mowing. And by the time we started again, I couldn't remember where we were. So this interview will start right there with me not remembering where we were. Here, me and Judy Lyons Schneider.
Yeah. So I was just explaining that I'm technologically challenged, but we do seem to have quiet.
For the moment.
For the moment, yes. And we're looking out at a perfectly coiffed lawn. So I have no idea where we were because we took this long break in which I talked about myself the whole time.
Which I enjoyed.
Well, thank you very much. I was thinking about something I wanted to ask you. You said earlier, this is going back to some earlier stuff because I'm not sure where we were. You said that you thought you took after your mom because she collected things and that you did as well. But you didn't say that she was artistic or that anybody in the family.
My mother was very artistic in ways that she did not put down. She loved flowers and she studied Ikebana and made these fabulous floral arrangements. She had a knack for putting together interiors. She was very artistic, but she never put any pencil or crayon or paintbrush to paper.
No, but she was creative in all the areas that she could allow herself to be in, apparently.
And she was very supportive and nurturing to me in that regard.
Yes. And they're going to start again, but we're going to ignore them for now. So did you think that she wanted to, you know what I'm asking?
Yeah. I don't think she felt an emptiness or loss for not doing that. She expressed herself in other ways. She enjoyed playing the piano. She had a very active life, and I don't know that she could have brought herself to work with art materials. I think growing up in the family she grew up in, it would have been considered quite a frivolous thing to do.
See, that's actually what I'm looking at, it's very common for parents who would have done something if they could have to pass the desire for that and the talent for that on to a child who then does it, you know. Although sometimes the parent doesn't nurture it. Yeah. Do you have siblings?
Yes, I have a sister, and she does not draw or paint either. I guess she has gotten in recent years into making pottery. Mm. The community that she lives in down here in Florida has a clay room. And she got into that. In fact, when I go down and visit, I try to make it at a time that I can go in and play with the clay as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cute because she has made some various shapes but has been loath to paint on them. And she's asked me to do the designs, paint some of the designs on her things. But she does that and needlepoint.
Mm-hmm.
And she's losing patience for needlepoint.
So it is there.
Yeah.
Was it in your dad's family as well or not? And do you know if it was in your mom's family and they just...
Well, I think it was in my mom's family because she was eldest of four.
Mm.
And her youngest sibling, a brother, was a physician. And the form of relaxation on his days off was frequently painting.
Yeah.
So there was something there, and cousins on my mother's side are artistic, but, I'm not aware of any of them, and I'm in touch with them doing any artwork.
You know what's interesting to me, maybe this is not accurate, but the dual lines of having the impulse and the talent to create art, but the insistence that is somehow not going to make a living, that it's not serious,
yeah,
it's not practical. That's exactly right. And it's kind of like a dual, we have the physician who might have been a great artist if he didn't think he had to do something else, And we have you who are apparently the only one in the system who actually was able to make this your life. to say, this is going to be my life and my livelihood and my...
Well, I think that really is true. And I'm just thinking that there are two of my cousins who, as teenagers and previous to their teenage years, loved to draw and paint, but...
They do something else.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I guess I was really lucky because I couldn't imagine myself not doing this.
No.
You know, in some way. My dad's side was not artistically aware in any way.
And it's the Philistine side.
I think, and my dad's sense of humor being what it was, I remember how insulted I was as a kid when someone asked me, what did I want to be when I grew up? And I said, well, after I got over the actress stage, I said that I wanted to be an artist. And my dad happened to overhear me saying this. And I loved drawing people. At that time, I was into figure drawing and all. And his comment was, oh, you'll be a great artist. You'll paint men and women on bathroom doors. Ha, ha, ha.
Oh, dear.
I was...
He was a Philistine.
And I remember years later telling him, you know, that that was really a very crass kind of comment. And he still laughed. He said, why?
He
didn't get it.
It's interesting, too, because your mother married him, so there wouldn't have been any room there for her to...
That's true.
You know.
And maybe that's something that she really got early on.
Oh, I'm sure you're right. And also, it may have been some of the motivation for all the encouragement she gave you. Mm. You know. Because I don't believe... You know, you said earlier, just a few minutes ago, that you were lucky, and I don't really believe that it's luck. I think it's something, you know, something that makes us able to, I mean, because you had to overcome a mindset that said, this is not a serious lifestyle, this is not something, this is a frivolous, not practical, not, you should not do this in some ways. You had to overcome that. That was, because it was obviously there.
Yeah.
So you had something that let you do that.
Maybe it was my father's stubborn streak.
Maybe it was. Maybe it was. Yeah. It's really interesting that you say that. What came to mind when you thought of that?
Well, he, and I loved him dearly, and he was a very gentle man. And he would not have knowingly hurt me in any way, and yet he was oblivious.
Right.
You know, like he didn't have a clue.
Right. Clueless.
And he also was very stubborn. He would put a mindset to something, and it was really rare that there would be any deviation from this mindset. And if that happened, it had to have been something that he was almost tricked into mistaking, you know. So, but that just came to mind.
So do you think of yourself as stubborn?
No. I don't know what anybody else would say.
Well, you know, if we don't call it stubbornness, there is, it seems to me, a need for a kind of single-mindedness to do what you do and to produce what you produce.
Well, I have to say that I have a very strong focus. And when I'm working in a particular direction, it could be for a show, and I need to have X number of pieces by a certain date, the blinders go up. And, you know, until it's under control, and I give myself deadlines, because I don't like to work under stress if I can help it. I am focused, but I don't know that I would call myself stubborn. Too bad my husband's not here.
No, we could ask him, right? Yeah, right. But you know, that what you're describing is not so far from stubborn, it seems to me.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Well, in the sense that I believe that all qualities have uses. And you can call a quality by something that people will like and something that they won't like, but it'll be the same thing, right. You know. And the capacity to be single-minded, to be focused, to put aside everything else, to not be dissuaded from your path, which is kind of how you described your dad. You must have that in order to do this, and maybe you did get it from him.
Focus and stubborn. I have to give some more to that one.
Well, let me ask you, if somebody tries to interrupt you when your blind is on and you're working, what do you do?
Well, it depends in what way. If it's something like the phone, I have no problem letting it ring. Mm-hmm. If someone is at the door and I'm here alone, chances are that I will go to the door. Unless when I'm working with certain materials, it doesn't matter. I really can't leave them, or, you know, the materials will set
right
prematurely, or something will be...
right, but that's out of your control. This is not...
Yeah.
Maybe you're not stubborn.
Well...
I don't think stubbornness is such a bad thing. Unless it closes off option, which is really what you were describing with your dad. Yeah. You know, that if it closes off option, then it limits what the person can have, experience, do. Mm. And in that way, I think that's kind of a shame. Mm-hmm. But, you know, stubbornness is responsible for a whole lot of production.
I guess that's true. I never really thought of stubbornness as a virtue.
I know you have children. Did they follow in the...
Yes, I have two daughters.
And now the phone is ringing.
Right.
Would you like to answer it?
No.
Okay, fine.
I have two daughters who are both extremely artistic and talented. My older daughter, who is a writer... Hmm. And musician, has done some beautiful pieces of artwork. And she gave up the art, although she dabbles from time to time, because she has needed to concentrate on earning
to focus.
More of it. Right. And my other daughter is a jewelry designer. And what was kind of interesting was, since her older sister drew, and I drew, and her father would often copy photographs, she was really intimidated, and she was afraid to draw. Mm-hmm. And I found that very distressing. Mm-hmm. I didn't care if she was an artist or not, but I really didn't want her to be afraid to put her hand at it.
Yeah.
And what I did one day was decide how to do something about it. And
how old was she?
She was about, I guess, 4 years old.
Mm.
4 or 5 years old.
And she already knew she didn't want to...
She wouldn't...
Wow.
So it was...
How many years between them?
4 and a half. And, you know, as I say, it really distressed me. So I sat her down one day, and we took a large sheet of paper, and I said, we have to draw circles. And she helped me draw circles, and we filled the page with circles. And I was saying, you know, it's so much fun to take these circles and see what you can do with them. We put a, you know, I put a smiling face into one. I said, look at that, you have a person. Put a string underneath, drew a string. Look, you have a balloon. The sun, you know, what can you think of? And it was very interesting because it really broke the ice for her. Mm-hmm. She still hesitates to draw, but she draws well. As I said, she's a jewelry designer of costume jewelry that incorporates a lot of antique findings. And
collage.
Yeah, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And she has to have a catalog of her work, and she does these beautiful drawings of her pins and, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so she can draw, but it's not something that she will do without a reason for doing it. But she's got a fabulous sense of design.
So it does sound like it's in the system.
Yeah.
I was going to tell you something that came up as a result of talking about using part of the of that piece, ripping it. That do you know who Dick Hyman is?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I interviewed Dick, and we were talking about the fact that a musician, if he composes something and he doesn't like it, he can use pieces of it other places. And also that pieces of it can be in his unconscious and come up in other places. But it never occurred to me that an artist could literally rip up pieces of her.
I can show you. Talk about collecting things. You know, in going through old pieces that I've not been pleased with and didn't feel I wanted to work further on them, but there were elements that I could use. You know, I've got boxes with those things, and periodically
you recycle them.
Absolutely.
It's exactly the same thing, and it's interesting because it never occurred to me. But of course it makes perfect sense, especially if you're working in abstract.
It's great fun, but in order to work with collage, you need to, I guess, be a collector.
Mm-hmm.
Or I need to be. And it's the greatest feeling when you've saved something for 15 or 20 years and you're working on something and then, oh!
You know, I know this one. I know this feeling, although not as a result of being an artist. And it's so lovely to hear you talk about it with the obvious delight. And that quality of delight in the work is, I suppose, why I want to do these interviews. Because it seems to me that as a culture, most people are doing things that don't delight them.
It's sad, but true.
Yes. And for some of the reasons that we were talking about earlier, that we have this idea in this culture that creativity is frivolous. No. You know, unless you're a rock star.
Well, a thing that distresses me is that with funding and so forth that's being cut back, that kids are not having the opportunity to show their creative sides.
Even to explore them.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's so much thinking outside the box that gets developed, seems to me, through exploring things.
Yes.
And, you know, I think that's it's a big negative in the education our kids are getting.
I agree. But again, it's just the result of a mental set which says this isn't important.
Exactly.
And so it's
no
the first
value first to get
there to go. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so in my when we were here before and I got to see your work, it seems to me that you're all over the board. I mean, you do everything.
I guess I do.
Yes, you do. You do everything. You draw literally, you know, and then you do abstract, and you do collage. You work in all kinds of different mediums, some things I've never even heard of. So is there a favorite or something you haven't done yet or something you haven't done enough yet? Or?
Well, one of the things that I do, I'm a printmaker. And
what does that mean?
I make prints from a plate, not reproductions, but original prints. And I have an etching press in my studio. And I will work from, without getting very technical, different things that don't require acids and so forth, like etching. I had done etching many, many years ago, and I found that it affected my health.
Mm.
That I would come from these classes, which I loved, and it's like my mind was stimulated and all, but gee, I felt awful lousy. I just wanted to go to sleep. And so that for many years, I didn't go near printmaking. And then in one of the local art centers in New Jersey, where I lived at the time, there was a demo being done on non-toxic printmaking. And I went and I got excited all over again. So what it is I will make collagraphs, which are collaged plates. I will work in...
You know, I have no idea what you're talking about. Can you describe the process?
The thing.
Yes.
which is a plate mm-hmm. that prints, printed from.
What is it made of?
It could be anything. Plates that I've used can be plastic, a sheet of like plexi that I have carved or cut into. It can be cardboard, where I will create collagraphs, which are collaged plates. It's pasting things on top of each other and then inking this plate. It could be on metals.
But if it's on metal, do you have to use a tool?
Yes. Yeah. Same as you need to use a tool on plastic.
Plastic, right.
So the only, and even on cardboard, you almost always need to use a tool.
Because it has to be imprinted, that's where the ink's going to go.
Yeah, although you can also make a collagraph with Elmer's glue.
Let
it dry and you ink, you know, you protect the glue when it's dry and then you can work from that.
Wow.
So it's, I mean, it's very exciting because you can print anything. I can take leaves from the garden.
Yes.
And I can print those.
I see that.
So I love starting with a monoprint. It could be just a color that I will start with and take it from there. It's very rare that I have a particular finished image in mind. It really...
Yeah, it's always emerging.
Yeah. I'll start with something I want to work with or some subject matter or image, and it just sort of goes from there.
Right. So are you saying that currently printmaking is near the top of your list?
Well, that's usually, or frequently, not always. The last couple of things I've done have not started with prints, but it's amongst the top three, I would say, mm-hmm. that I will start with a print, and then I love working with something called Shin Collet, which is collaging and printing simultaneously. And I love the layering process. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what material.
Is this also part of the tactile thing? Yeah, that you're putting it on and...
Yeah.
And I love we're moving our hands.
I can't help it.
No, well, I'm doing it too. And right.
But I love seeing the colors and things from underneath as they come through.
And when you print it, is it in black?
Not necessarily.
Oh, it depends on the color of the ink that you use.
Right.
And so you could use more than one ink?
Oh, sure.
Oh, wow.
There are, if you look at some of the prints that I've done, you can see that there are about four or five layers, colors printed over each other.
Do you know how that's going to look now when it comes out, or is it sometimes surprising?
Somewhat. Always surprising. Mm-hmm. It's very rare that it looks exactly like what I expect. The one exception was when I did an edition, and it was in an edition, each piece is inked and printed as close to exactly the same as possible. And I did it once and swore I would never do it again. It was, and it wasn't a large plate, but it was very frustrating to me to, I knew what it would look like, but it was very frustrating to me not to be able to try something a little different with it.
You're, I don't know how to say this, you're a jazz artist. It's all improvisation.
Well, in a sense it is.
Yes, it is.
You know, I mean, you have an educated guess when you do something, but it doesn't mean that that's the way it really...
Well, and not only that, but the thing, you allow it to go
so
where
it
it's going.
Me.
Right, it leads you. Right, right.
Yeah.
So you're not demanding it to be something or, you know, or duplicating what you've done before.
Duplicating, no. Demanding it.
Yeah.
There comes a point.
Yeah.
You know, that it's clear to me what...
I'm laughing because I'm thinking, not stubborn. Sorry.
Okay. But there's a point, like there are things that are in my studio now, which I had been working on when you
were here before.
And now they're to the point that they're finished. But they're still in their for viewing positions for me to study them just in case, because I really don't want, after I have photographed them or done whatever documentation or framed some of them, to look at them again and say, you know, what this needs is so-and-so.
Yeah.
So there comes a point that, you know, I'll dance with you.
Yeah, right.
But there has to be a certain, it has to look a certain way,
right.
Close to the end. Stubborn.
You can feel it when you're talking about it, right? I can see it happening. Yeah, I had a similar experience. Somebody pointed out a quality to me that I had to come to accept. So I know just how that feels. Okay, this has just been delightful. I don't know. Is there anything else that you take a minute to think about what you might like to say about yourself as an artist, art in general, just anything that comes to mind?
One of the things I guess that's been very gratifying for me is to be part of the art community down here. I have made some really good friends, which was a concern that I had because I had such a great group of artist friends up north. And I have met and have become close to some terrific people down here. But it's very disappointing to me that the area really doesn't support the visual arts. And I understand that the performing arts are what bring the bucks in and so forth. But that part of it is disappointing to me. More and more public venues where artists had an opportunity to show are being cut off.
Really?
Yeah. And others not, you know, nothing to replace them. And I understand money is tight, and it's always been tight for the arts. But that's one disappointment. You know, we call ourselves the cultural coast and so forth. And I guess we are, but it would be nice if there was support for more than just the performing arts.
Yeah, this is a recurring theme.
Yeah.
You know, it's what I was saying before about that culturally we don't value the arts. We don't really value the performing arts, except as you say, it brings in money. So, but not for itself.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And we're just not a culture that does that.
And
so for those of us who fell in love with an art form early in life, we're not living at a time when, you know, that was a honored position.
Yeah. Despite that, I still feel that I'm fortunate to, for whatever reasons, to have what I used to laugh at when people say I had a gift, but I really...
Yeah.
As I've gotten older,
yes.
That I really feel that is. I feel very fortunate.
I want to say this positively. You clearly have a gift. You have a gift.
Thank
you
me.
Have several gifts. You have your vision, which is amazing. You have your capacity to produce, which is stunning to me. And you have, if it's not stubbornness, you have perseverance. You know, you keep doing it.
Yeah.
And those are gifts. There's no question about it. Lots of people have one or another of those, and they don't have all of them, you know?
Well, I have to ask my husband.
But don't blame it on me.
Of course not.
Thank you very much, Judy.
You're very welcome. Pleasure.
Am I lucky or what? I get to have these amazing interviews with these amazing people, and actually to learn things I never expected to learn. So I want to say a few more words about Civil War before I play the last song and close this show. I mostly want to say that if you're engaged in an internal civil war, and certainly you would know that, because you'll be very unhappy, please consider disengaging, even temporarily, from the conflict. Intercept the critical missiles that you throw at your self-esteem. Just listening to yourself, to your inner dialogue, can help you recognize when and how you do it, because we don't all do it the same. Try to catch yourself in the act of self-criticism, and if you can, just interrupt it. This is not as easy as it sounds, I know. I suggested it to a client of mine named Miriam, and when she came for her next session, she was very, very puzzled. She said, "I don't know why you asked me to do that exercise. I never call myself bad names. I paid attention, and I found that I only give myself encouraging and loving messages." Miriam was amazed and surprised and annoyed at me, actually, when later I pointed out that she had just hit herself in the head and called herself a dummy. This stuff is so ingrained, we're really not aware that we're doing it. And maybe, like most of us, you've been fighting a civil war over one thing or another all of your life, blaming yourself for whatever went wrong in your life or for whatever you didn't do or couldn't do well enough. And if so, scolding yourself may be such a well-established reflex that, like Miriam, you're not able to see it right away. But catching yourself in the act is still worth the try. However, if you can't do this now, forgive yourself. For some of us, the Civil War reflex is so well entrenched, too much a part of who we are to change overnight. And your inability to do this exercise, that is, catching yourself in the act of self-criticism, will provide you with a wonderful opportunity. It gives you a chance to resist using your difficulty with this exercise as ammunition in your next battle. Well, okay. Next week, I will ask you if you were able to do this exercise, even at all, just catch yourself calling yourself names or being mean to yourself. But right now, I'm going to play the last song from the CD. Not the last song on the CD, but the last song I'm playing from the CD. It's called "I Would Have Loved You As Long As You Loved Me."
The smile that made my heart stand still, those mesmerizing eyes, the mind that turned a simple sentence into a surprise, the music that accompanies your every waking breath. I was sure I'd be with you till parted by death, and I would have loved you long as you loved me. I would have loved you just as long as you loved me. The knack you had of criticizing so much that I do flash of rage that always seemed to come out of the blue. First, you're Mr. Masterful, and then little boy lost, simply irresistible, the payoff worth the cost. And I would have loved you long as you loved me. I would have loved you just as long as you loved me. When did it start to fall apart? I'll never know for sure. Had I but seen the symptoms, could I have found the cure? But by the time I realized just how much ground we'd lost, the space that separated us was too wide to be crossed. Recriminations, said and done. What to who? With all our battles, lost or won, one thing will still be true.
Not the last song on the CD. The last song on the CD is The last song on the CD is the first song in the show. You Really Can. I end the CD with You Really Can, but I start the show with it. So I'm hoping that you will all go up on the website, thelynshow.com, thelynnesHOW.com, click on Contact Me and vote. Say, I think that the way it is perfect. Starting with You Really Can, ending with I Won't Go With a Whimper makes great sense to me. Or, I think it would make more sense if you started with I Won't Go With a Whimper and ended with You Really Can. Or, I heard a song that I think it would be better if you started the show with that or ended the show with that. One of the other nine. If you didn't hear all the songs, or you are wanting to hear some of them again, it is my hope that the podcasts of all these shows are currently on the website. And you can, when you're up there on the website, you can click on the show that has the songs and play the show again, or, you know, move the little dial to the place where the song is and listen to it. Or, while you're up on the website, you can click on the icon of the CD itself, I Won't Go With a Whimper, and that will take you to CD Baby. CD Baby is an online music store. So, of course, you could buy the CD if you wanted to from there. Or you could just click on all the songs. and it will play, I think, 30 or 40 seconds of each one. You know, there's another way to hear these songs. I think maybe it's iTunes will play them all. I'm not absolutely positive. But if you have an opinion about any of this, please share it with me. And of course, as I try and say all the time, although I think I forget, I am open to pretty much anything you want to say. If you want to comment on the show, on the material, if you have a question, please feel free to contact me and email me and tell me what you want to know. While you're on the website, I also often forget to say the book from which all this material is taken is available on the website, as is the workbook that has all the exercises, and there's an audiobook as well. And you can click actually on the thing that says, well, it should be saying preview of the book, but it probably is still saying review of the book, and you can hear me reading from it. Okay, so I want to thank, as always, Josh Hackney, my IT guy, who, God bless him, is at the end of the phone or email or voicemail when I am calling and saying, help, help, I hit some button and I can't do this or that now. And there is Josh's calm, reasoned voice telling me, walking me through it. So yet again, if you have any issues with computers, with recording, with electronics, you really want Josh. And you can get him by doing what I've been telling you to do for the last 2 minutes, and that is go up on my website, click on Contact Me, and just say, I want Josh, and I will get it to him. So as always, I hope that you heard something in the show that was interesting to you, or useful to you, or entertaining to you. Something that makes you think you might want to come back again next week and listen to the next show. And that show will be same time, same station, the Radio Ear Network, Tuesday afternoon, 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, or Mondays at 3 a.m. in case you happen to be listening not in the United States, or early in the morning. So I'll be here then, and I sure hope you will be too. Tune in again next week when I will continue to talk about the power of our unconscious and at least begin to talk about the bag of tricks that our unconscious has and the way that it uses it in our behalf. Also, next week, and I fervently hope for the rest of the month, I will be interviewing pianists, people that make their life about the piano. So hopefully you'll be there.
I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause and Sister Phoenix. We won't give up the flag, no, no. We will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten